Hey, this is Dr. Drew, and you are listening to This Life
with Bob Forrest
and Dr. Drew.
Here we are.
Hey, welcome to another episode of This Life Podcast. Bobby is coming in. Bobby, you there?
I'm right here in the car. I'm going as fast as I can on the 5 freeway, Dr. Drew.
Dude, be safe, my friend.
This is life.
This is the perfect. I know. This life is like it drops into this life, and we just turn on the microphones. But here's the deal, Bob. I'm going to put you on hold for a few minutes. I know you're. I want you to concentrate on driving in here. You'll be here in a few minutes. But we welcomed a command performance from Dr. Bruce Heischober because it was so popular last time, and for two reasons. One, we just had this horrible tragedy in Orlando. And Bruce was in San Bernardino during that whole mess. And I want to talk to him. We didn't touch on it last time. I want to talk about that. And then we're going to get back into the opioid issue on the heels of the Prince death. Okay?
Perfect.
All right. We're going to put you on hold. We may go back to you in a few minutes. And just keep listening, Bobby, and everybody else keep listening, too. So welcome back, Bruce.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Dr. Bruce, Dr. Spaz, whatever you want to be called now. Dr. Heischober.
We'll answer to anything, basically.
What is that? Where did that Dr. Spaz thing come from, anyway?
It has to do with when Adam Carolla's evil eyes are glaring at me, I tend to
get nervous.
I think I have anomia or some sort of neurologic. I can know something and if I say it to him, it's like I'll say, well, there's this kind of crankshaft and
it's called aging. It's called aging. I have the same thing.
No, but I've done this 20 years. That's when he started doing it.
But here's what I get now. If I don't concentrate on every word he says, and if I ask him, if I sort of query what he's just said, he just starts screaming at me. Like, what did I just say? What did I say? I go, I understand you said something. I want to make sure I'm clear on what it is you're saying. Because sometimes he says stuff that's sort of like, did I hear that right? And he cannot tolerate anything because it's not. It implies the possibility that there wasn't exquisite focus on every pearl that dropped from his mouth.
Oh,
enough about Adam. Let's move on.
Yeah. So you were in San Bernardino during the, thanks, Mr.
Well,
producer.
I was called into the, first of all, my son's school borders, the property borders on the property of the apartment complex.
Yeah. Where the couple lived.
Right. And so the school is put on lockdown. Then we go and pick up the kid, take him home. And a friend who has connections in the police department called and said, hey, there's some sort of a chase originating, and it was the corner of my son's school. So that was disconcerting. And then he gets home, and we're sitting watching TV, and there are all kinds of mechanized police vehicles driving by and fire trucks. I'm wondering, what the heck's going on? Because at that time, I was supposed to be in San Bernardino. So ended up getting called back into the ER. One patient, we ended up just getting one or two patients, and the woman that it wasn't my patient, but saw us,
you're dealing to, with, yeah,
was shot in the leg.
Ugh.
Ah, thank you.
And she needed a vasculosurgeon and orthopedist and all stuff.
And was admitted and
did okay.
But she did fine. Yep. An interesting anecdote. Several days later, the son came through the emergency department, and there was a Jordanian family who had a tragic situation with their kid, their 19-year-old who overdosed. And the son of this person became very irate at somebody being Middle Eastern. And it's just, unfortunately, I think it's emblematic of what goes on now, this horrible tragedy today, and the lesson, you just can't generalize to all Muslims. And
no, but I think we're animals that talk. We're
absolutely
monkeys that talk, and then we go into these primitive modes when
lizard
we've been
brain
threatened. Yeah, and so we're talking, of course, about the Orlando tragedy. It's Gay Pride weekend. It was their partying at night, and this guy walks in and just kills, at this point, 50 people, and it's heartbreaking, and it makes me, I don't know, I have a really weird reaction to this. It makes me want to double down on what it is we have to offer in the West. You know what I mean? I mean, when I think to myself, what do we do? I mean, it's easy to go, well, guns. I think that's too simple an answer. I think because you got to ask. I'm all over the place here, obviously. Let me ask you, what do you do with this?
How do you
deal with these people?
I think it's where democracy comes in, and listening to right now, it just sort of all piggybacks on the political situation where I just listen to the news and I hear it's sort of liberal, conservative. I'm in the middle somewhere.
I'm an independent,
frustrated.
I'm an independent, I'm feeling frustrated, but here's what I'm starting to think is that So let's take that kid that shot up, and he's a 29-year-old.
Born in New York.
Born in New York, New Yorker of Afghani descent. Right. Who knows what trauma was transmitted through his family? That country has been traumatized multiple generations, so some trauma may have gotten through. He may have had some personality issues. He may have been depressed. None of that matters
right.
at all, right? And so I heard a lot of people saying, well, we should meet people like that with love. And I heard some of the city officials saying that. I go, oh, really? Well, why don't we meet the Nazis with that, too? How would that have worked? The point being that these people, of course, there must be some liability in this kid that he's overtaken by this ideology. Radicalized. There's something wrong with him.
Right.
It would respond to mental health interventions, but it's not a mental health problem.
No.
It's a sociological problem that he becomes fodder. He becomes fertile soil for that ideology to take in. So my thinking is, well, they're offering something that people like that want and need and respond to. We better offer something better. And right now we don't. We don't offer a lot of hope. The economics are a mess. We don't give them good jobs. I mean, I just think to myself, well, what are we offering? What did they offer that we don't? Well, eternal salvation and virgins and all this stuff. And it's like, if you're not quite all well, that might be something you find appealing, as opposed to, what do we have here? What are we giving them here? Maybe stay a security guard for a while? You know what I mean?
One of the therapists in our drug treatment program is interested in the death rate in, what is it, white American males.
Yeah, looking at the suicide rate and the drug
suicide
use. Suicide drugs.
So is there a segue between what he's found and sort of the vacuum of meaning in our lives in Western society?
Yes. And Bobby, I want to get you in on this. Bobby, you hear what I'm saying here? Do you agree?
Yeah, no, I'm right with you. There's a lot of hopelessness in young people in America, and Americans don't want to acknowledge it.
Right, and so we are not offering a good alternative. So the monkey's the talk.
Well, they're also offering narcissistic exclamation point satisfaction.
I get it.
Which I think the kid is exposed to fame and money and all of that America is, that they don't have access to. You know, that's one thing I think that goes with even the let's just get religion out of it. The Virginia Tech shooting was the second highest. That kid was just trying to get even with a bunch of kids that bullied him.
He was a floridly psychotic, though. He was in a manic psychosis. And that's, yes, there may have been some circumstances that came to bear, but it's very different than this one. These are the people that pick up arms and do stuff.
You know what's weird about floridly psychotic in the world that we live in, the psych world? The judge will say, did he go to a store? Did he buy ammunition? Did he buy a gun?
Yeah, I understand, but that's...
Before?
You know what I mean?
So yeah, people don't know what we're talking about when we say people are psychotic, because the law doesn't even have an accurate portrayal of what psychotic is.
Well, they differentiate between legally insane and the kinds of insanity we talk about.
By my estimation, we have a million young people that are susceptible to this thing. What are we going to do about it?
All right. So you have an idea? We're going to go around the room. Do you have an idea?
No, I'm looking to the doctors.
Okay.
Tell me,
all right.
Doctor.
Put Bobby on hold. Do you have any ideas?
Well, I'm Christian, and I have a belief system. It's not radical, and okay. I know
so a faith based something. So we need help from the faith community.
Something more to believe in. I think there's so much immediate gratification, internet based gratification.
Yeah. Something
I just
more to
kids.
Believe in. Just something stay more. Right there. Right. Something more to believe in. I think that's exactly right. And what have we always done in the past? What made men go to war in the 1940s? Right. I mean, what made we believe we were defending something important?
Love of country.
And I think the words value and virtue have come out of my mouth a ton in the last like 2 weeks, and I've been listening to myself. Where do those words come from? I haven't spoken those words ever, and those words are coming out of my mouth. So we need to sort of re-entrench in what we value. We need to develop virtue and value that, and then there needs to be some sort of faith-based help, something, right?
Right. Well, I would agree.
Yeah, and so I think, and that's what the West has always offered. It's always offered value and virtue and sort of something that you can achieve that isn't about the immediate gratification.
Right.
I mean, back to the Greeks.
Right.
Virtue, 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 virtue. That's what they talked about. Somehow we need to make that appealing. We need to market that.
Right.
No?
Yeah, no, I agree. I just look at the lone wolf scenario becomes so difficult to guard against. And
yeah, but if you got him involved in something else that he valued, and something that virtuous, and something that, you know, that it's back to service and all the stuff we normally talk about, but it's a kind of a different way of framing it.
Right.
Well, I don't know. I'm getting very concerned.
Yeah. I have friends that are Muslim and some that are very angry that there's not more of an outpouring of explanation. This is what we believe, and condemnation. I think there's a fear amongst many sincere Muslims that if they speak out against this type of thing, they're going to be targeted.
Well, that's ridiculous. That's what they need to do more of, because they have a PR problem.
Right. You know,
they have a PR problem. And I just think that they should be more heartbroken than anybody, because it's something that they hold dear is being bastardized and used as this horrible instrument of destruction.
Right.
They should be more hurt than anybody, the Muslims.
Right. And there's
they should speak up about that.
Right. They should. But again, look at the leadership. I mean, it's do you agree with Trump? Which I don't agree with this. Don't let Muslims. It seems like it's black and white. Nothing is black and
white. His thing is, I just got to figure this out. That's what I'm trying to do right now. I have no power to do anything, but... If I were trying to be president, I go, well, let's everything stand still while I talk to my leaders or whatever. I don't know.
Yeah.
If he wants everything to freeze for a few months, freeze everything. Solve this. I don't care. Obama wants to freeze everything. Freeze it. Let's just freeze everything.
Right.
Freeze air travel. I don't give a shit. Solve this problem.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
But
I was there when you had your HLN show with the Muslim community that came in. And I think there was a lot of what interested me was the difference. There were so many different opinions on what, even in that community, what should be done with the situation.
Yeah,
I was surprised.
That's part of their problem.
Yeah.
They need to figure out a unified, and I've talked to some people that are very clear about it. They're very clear and they're very good about it, but they got to get the PR out. They got to get people who understand that they're trying to address this, trying to deal with it. They don't, you know, of course they don't support, this.
No.
You know, so. All right. Well, that's. I think that's all. Susan, was there anything else you wanted to get into with this tragedy? And there's a whole LGBTQ. And by the way, I noticed this morning that the president did not mention gender when he talked about equality. And I was like, you missed that one. But to be that as it may, it's a community that has been. This is what my thoughts on that were. It's a community that has been horribly punished for nothing. And now that punishment is going to come not just from within but without.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it makes the within look a little better. Like maybe we're okay here. We're not so bad in terms of how we embrace people with differing whatevers. But now the threat's coming from without. And the question is, do we have the intestinal fortitude to protect against that? I hope so. All right. I'm sorry, I'm getting text here while I'm trying to...
On call today?
No, this thing, what we're just talking about is creating all this demand.
Yeah, great.
I say something that I was thinking when you guys were talking? I grew up Catholic, and there was no tie between my Catholicism in the 60s and early 70s, my family. We were Catholic. That was our faith. My dad was a Democrat. That was his politics. It was very separate. People didn't mix religion and politics together like we do now in this very dangerous stew. Mm-hmm. So that faith is lost in that. Because I think religion is good. I don't choose to have it in my own life, but I think religion is a great thing. But when it gets mixed with politics, which it has in the United States and now in the Middle East, when it gets mixed with politics, it's a dangerous, deadly combination. And I don't think this is going to be... See, I don't like the ISIS angle of this. I prognosticate there will be a killing at a Trump rally before November.
It might be him.
Yeah, that's what I was...
Yeah.
There's no doubt in my mind.
I'm not saying anything other than that scares me. Either of the candidates could get killed. As soon as Obama was elected, I thought, oh, please, please. Nobody came in, please. God.
Thank God.
Yeah. Yeah, almost.
You know what I'm saying? This thing is getting to a boiling point. There's no separation of church and state. There's no separation of. There's no respect. I try to be respectful. I don't like Hillary. I don't like Hillary, and I think Trump is a nutcase. So who do I vote for? This
Gary Johnson.
Libertarian guy? Yeah. Is that who we're going to vote for? I might vote for this libertarian guy.
He's a pot smoker.
That the cooler heads will prevail.
But
I don't even know his name. Drew, I don't even know the name of the guy I'm going to vote for president for.
Yep.
That's how crazy it's become.
I'm with you on that. I'm the same way.
But do you agree, Drew? Because it happened, Bruce, Drew, it happened in our lifetime. Religion was what we practiced. Your politic was something separate. It was Jimmy Carter who sewed those two things together.
It's been around together in some form or another for a long time. But
well, historically, for hundreds of years it had. But in America, it had been pretty respectful.
I will tell you the one thing that concerns, well, one thing, another thing that concerns me is that usually when people look back at major historical problems, they always go, why didn't they do something? Why? Didn't they know what was happening? And it feels like we're in the middle of one of those times.
Yeah.
You know,
I think America, I think what we're going to see hundreds of years from now, I know that's how you think. I've known you so long. I think hundreds of years from now, people are going to study the United States and say, when they got too big, why didn't they separate it?
Oh my God. That is the Muslim extremist goal. They want to separate it into us into 50 countries.
No, I'm talking United States
that,
and the Eastern United States.
That was Osama bin Laden's goal. That's what he wanted. He thought it was too big and powerful. He wanted to break it up into a bunch of different regions. So anyway.
Well, he and I have something in common because I think I do believe it's too divisive.
All right. Well, let's get off.
So how?
Okay. We're going to take a little break, Bob. We're going to hold on a second because I'm going to get over to the print stuff because we got a lot to talk about there. A lot of emails, a lot of calls. Opiates are on people's mind now. Suboxone, yes or no? Bruce is under assault for being an advocate, and I'll further that assault in just a minute. We'll take a little break. Right back. I'm getting involved with the advisory board on an organization called HEAL, H-E-A-L, and they have an app. It's called HEAL app, H-E-A-L, and these guys promise a physician at your home within 2 hours, and it is $99 all in, and most insurances cover it. These physicians are carefully selected by our team. They are all board certified, so we can vouch for them, and everyone we know that has used this product is just beside themselves happy. Do not go to an ER. Do not go to an urgent care. If you're in a city covered by HEAL, click HEAL, $99. Someone will be there. And people don't understand that what you really want is just a physician to use their judgment to tell you what this is. Is it serious? Is it not? The treatments are often simple. There is just simply today, unless there's a real emergency, no reason to go to the ER. And I would suggest even going to an urgent care when you're feeling bad, need help. I mean, why do that? And by the way, that's much more expensive. Sounds too good to be true. It is not. This is an opportunity. Check out the HEAL app. Hey, we're back. This Life Podcast. Bruce Hyshoper is our guest. And let's start with some emails, right? And then we'll go to the Suboxone thing. And again, just for clarity's sake, I don't, you know, the fact that there's religious fervor around anything makes
right.
me very frightened. And the enthusiasm for Suboxone is insane. You know, it's going to solve everything. No.
I'm not experiencing that enthusiasm. I must be in a pocket.
National Institute on Drug Abuse and the Drug Agency and Michael Bottichelli, they've been really, like, we're going to, you haven't seen that new, all those headlines? It's insane that only 10,000 doctors are certified. We need 50,000 certified. That's all Suboxone.
Right.
That's all to give Suboxone. We need them certified to give Suboxone is what the government is saying. And I'm saying, oh, slow your roll, everybody. The enthusiasm right. for Suboxone is excessive. It has a place for sure.
And so I have so many opinions on this, which I only, with so many people, if they get more people prescribing it, one of the problems is there are not requirements that go along with it, counseling, structure,
insane.
Meeting
no.
attendance.
Right, it's insane.
Right. But you have the DEA and you have Health and Human Services have been at odds for such a long time. And so I think a very spirited sort of attack on DEA and law enforcement approach to substance abuse is what's going on. And I think they don't really expect there to be sort of get the DEA giving up and allowing all these practices. Yeah. They're saying what we want 500 patients per Suboxone approved doctor.
Yeah.
I don't think that's going to happen.
Well, it's kind of crazy, frankly. I couldn't manage 20. You know, you're talking about opiate addicts.
Right, yeah. I have about 50 right now.
All right, we'll get into that in just a second. 20 opiate addicts under any conditions is a handful. You know what I mean? If you're ongoing dealing with them, because shit goes down with them.
Right,
shit goes down. Now, maybe it's better in Suboxone than abstinence, and that's something we can argue back and forth about. It's Safer, probably. Probably.
Oh, it's, I think it's absolutely safer.
Well, and probably.
We can go into that too. But again, it's not me. My 50 patients, we have a therapist.
Yeah,
it's case management, meeting requirements, drug testing requirements, and there is oversight that what concerns me, the government programs, the Medi-Cal, Medicaid reimbursement doesn't require. In fact, it only allows for so much treatment.
Well, not only that, the people that would be prescribing the Suboxone have no understanding of addiction. How about that guy in Northern California that was muling Suboxone to Minnesota? He put his son with a backpack full of Suboxone and muled it to Minnesota. So what? So the guy from California without a license but with certification can supervise the guy with a license in Minnesota but no certification on how to give Suboxone, muled by his son? You don't think that was insane?
Well, I don't know all
We're
the details
about
there.
Now. The details
right, no. I have an article in the stack of articles. I always carry around a bunch of articles I never get around to. But I've read these, and he wrote an excellent article. He seems to be a Suboxone. It's one of the pioneers in using Suboxone. In the article I have, he's talking about using it for methods of managing pain patients, surgery.
Well, okay, so that's what
so
I wanted
guy
to...
seemed to have
he had lots of experience, with, right. But he's not just an apologist. He's an excessive enthusiast.
Okay.
But be that as it may, it clearly doesn't understand addiction, but okay. And maybe for the chronic pain non-addicted patient, maybe he's the guy. You know, that's a different... What I think the population we're seeing a lot of now is that... And Bob, I'll get you in on this one. Don't you think seeing a lot more of these opioid-dependent, non-addicted, chronic pain patients?
Right.
In other words, they don't have the biology and the genetics of addiction. They have dependency. They look like addicts when they're in that pain pursuit cycle. But if we get them off stuff long enough, they probably would do okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, ASAM criteria, when it first came up in the 90s, they started, remember they had that term for that population called pseudo-addict.
Yes, they did, and that was kind of a catchback term, but I'm not ready to call them a pseudo-addict.
But I know a pseudo-addict when I meet one, and I know who Bruce could serve well with
right.
that Suboxone,
yes.
And I know that 90% of the people you're giving it to are not those people.
Okay, all right. So put Bob back on hold with that polemic. So he may or may not be right. I don't know the answer to that because okay, no one's really looked at this.
For just people listening, pseudo-addiction to me, the definition, is an individual that has real pain.
Yep.
And they're increasing they're getting meds from a doc, and they're increasing their use of the narcotic.
And they start to behave like an addict. They start to divert. They start to look different. They start to, you know.
They start to behave, but for all intents and purposes, they don't meet criteria for addiction.
Well, most importantly, they don't go back after you get them off, necessarily.
Right.
But here's the deal. There's zero clinical evidence that opioids are an effective treatment for chronic pain.
Exactly.
Zero.
Right.
It'd be the same as me saying, well, here's this hypertensive medication. Doesn't work. Zero evidence that it works. Let's figure out how to use it.
Right.
It's the same thing.
Absolutely.
Okay, so that's insanity, right?
That's insanity.
Okay, so I'm not saying that people shouldn't get their opiates if they're controlled and it works for them and blah, blah, blah. What I'm saying is the vast, vast, vast majority, it's not going to work because there's no evidence that it works. Let me read you an email. This is from somebody. Says, we're sick to death of you labeling all patients as drug addicts when some celebrity ODs, which I don't do. The reality is, without any available medical treatment, most pain patients don't abuse drugs. So, let me just address that. Most pain patients don't abuse drugs?
I think you have to select out what you mean by pain patients.
Bruce, we represent 5% of the world's population. We consume 80% of the opiates.
Right.
Huge and most of them are physician prescribed. So if pain patients aren't getting them, who the fuck is getting them?
No, and 80% of heroin addicts today started with pain meds.
Absolutely.
I couldn't believe
that's not at all surprising to me. And the big problem, again, in all of this is us, physicians. Those heroin addicts should have been called in and sent to treatment. Instead, they're cut off.
Yes.
That's terrible.
And the legal system, I've read some of the criteria. When you go to jail in Washington, D.C., you're tapered off methadone. Methadone's a whole other argument.
Well, why aren't we as enthusiastic about methadone as we are about Suboxone? It's the same thing.
Well, it's not the same thing. It has a different safety profile.
Same philosophy.
It's the same philosophy, but it's because it's tinged. Its reputation has been marred by...
So why aren't we as physicians getting as enthusiastic about methadone as we are?
We can't
about
prescribe
Suboxone.
It, first of all.
All right, okay.
It's federal. It's a federal offense to prescribe methadone.
And it ruins people's lives. If you're on enough to suppress your opiote use, you're on the couch.
Right.
So it's not a good... You know, anyway. Here's this email again. Never once have I taken more than 2 pills a day for 10 years. So good. Keep your medicine. That's somebody who needs it. Don't get high and survive 36 operations, including cervical spine, blah, blah, blah. As for the rapist, I don't know what that's all about. Unless the kid at Stanford.
Okay, but again, chronic pain syndrome versus someone with a physiologic cause for pain. Chronic pain syndrome, you don't have.
No, yes, you do. Yes, you do. You just the pain is amplified. The pain is the you don't have the degree of pain.
All right.
What's that article saying? Let's see it.
So, yeah, there's chronic pain syndrome. It tells you just coincidentally what it is.
But this is about sublingual buprenorphine.
Right, but it has the definition of chronic pain syndrome. So.
CPS, chronic pain syndrome, longstanding localized diffuse complaints of discomfort and pain that have persisted beyond the expected healing time.
There's nothing there, really, the reality.
It's persisted beyond the expected healing time. If resulting from injury.
Right.
So, and have resisted more conservative and traditional. It doesn't say whether it's something there or not there. Believe me, most of the time it's something there. Because here's what happens. You don't have the experience Bob and I have. Bob, correct me if I'm wrong. What happens towards the end of our running a program? What, 80-90% of our patients were chronic pain patients on excessive opiates, wouldn't you say?
In the Nash House?
No, back towards the end of when we were dealing. You know, at Los Encinos, a large majority of the patients were pain patients on opiates.
Yeah, workers' comp and that
all
whole
those secondary gains.
Right.
Too. All right, what would the patient say when they came in the hospital and I asked them on a scale of 10, how big is your pain?
They all have an 8 or 9 or a 10.
No. None of them have 8 or 9 or 10.
11.
Yes. They all say 11. They all say 15 or 20.
Right,
say 15 to 20. All of them. They all say that.
If they're smart, they say 8 or 9. Well,
then we take them off the opiates. We put them on only Toradol. No other treatment. One or two what?
That's Toradol? Their pain level when they're on
4 or 5
opioid induced hyperalgesia.
Four or five. Those.
And it's shocking to most, yeah. Unless they have a personality disorder and they are strictly there for the drugs and they're not telling you honestly what's going on.
Well, they're just drug addicts. But most of the time the other striking thing is when they come in, the pain is all they can talk about. They perseverate on it. 2 weeks after getting on opiates, they must be prompted to discuss their pain.
Right.
Which is, I mean,
so abstinence based, but just
abstinence
talking
based.
About all right.
So that's abstinence treatment. Put Bob on hold again. We're getting that background noise.
And I would say, see, I have a individualized treatment plan for patients.
So go where you're going. Abstinence versus Suboxone. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, a young person early on in their opiate abuse or addiction, I always try abstinence based first.
Sure.
Somebody that the extremes, an older individual, long term heroin.
Yeah.
Abuse.
With no resources.
Encourage them.
Oh, yeah. No family and whatever. Of course, that's a Suboxone patient.
Right. But someone with chronic pain, there are chronic pain patients that have an addictive disorder history. And those that don't.
That's right.
Those that do, those that don't or do. What interests me about Suboxone, it tends to actually reverse opioid-induced hyperalgesia.
This is what you said last time you were here. You said that before. You said it's a perfect treatment for chronic pain and opiate excess.
Yeah, perfect. I sound like one of the people accolades for it.
My question then is, why aren't we treating pain with Suboxone?
Well, in my, and I won't say what system I'm in, but there's a...
No, forget the, but why isn't that literature out there? Why is no one...
I have literature here.
Treating Suboxone initially for pain... Initially, I think
that goes back to drug companies putting money into, from the 90s, OxyContin.
The only drug company right now investing in marketing opiates is Suboxone.
No,
they're
I
the
agree.
Ones.
But where did this
marketing.
Come from? I think the reason we don't start with Suboxone is lack of experience.
Okay, so we could start with Suboxone.
Oh, I think for chronic pain patients, I think
we should start there. Okay, so that's the one. That's the to me that's the dividing line. If you could say to me that's going to treat effectively pain that's likely to be chronic. And by the way, I have another theory. You're going to love this. Reflex sympathetic dystrophy, RSD.
Right.
I think that's opiate-induced. I believe every patient I've ever seen with RSD is on opiates. And I've tested a little bit, taken those patients just off opiates. RSD is supposed
that's
to be chronic.
That's fascinating. It's very poorly
It goes away. It goes away when you give up
and
the opiates.
And it's probably a spinal cord level disorder, which is where your kappa receptors are, which would make sense.
Exactly. Why wouldn't that happen? I mean, when I take an opiate, I feel weird and shitty in all kinds of ways. I mean, tons of ways.
That's right. I haven't read that. You should be in
research. It's not out there. Because everyone gets freaked out when you say something's caused by an opiate. But RSD is caused by opiates.
Fascinating. We just had a patient like that in pain committee.
But the point is, though, I don't think that Suboxone would be good for that. You get him off everything. I have a very complicated chronic pain patient who I finally got off opiates. Her RSD went away. And she had the full center with the edema and the whole thing.
Wow.
Yeah, and the bone changes, everything. She forgets that she has that problem now.
Well, she's being researched.
And it was a preoccupation.
Write it up as a case study. I'd be very interested in the response. To me, there's such a bias. It's become a political hot potato.
Which is insane.
Right. So the things I was mentioning earlier.
Why is it not the same in hypertension? Or antibiotics.
Sex, drugs, and rock and roll.
I'm just saying. I'm just saying. That makes me insane.
Okay. But just the things I started mentioning before we got on the air, doing the podcast, and you said, well, wait. But Suboxone, what interested me that I hadn't learned in the Suboxone course until I started reading literature about its lack of a suppression of the immune system.
Yeah, yeah. That's as opposed to methadone.
As opposed to
any of the opiates, yeah.
Lack of, it doesn't block testosterone the same way. It doesn't block the pituitary adrenal access.
No, I understand. It's better. It's an improvement.
Respiratory depression issues.
Have you ever had a disaster during induction? Induction is the initial part of treating the Suboxone patient.
Don't tell you they're on benzos or if they drink on the side.
Oh, an opiate addict taking benzos? Huh?
Right, right.
Well, none of mine don't take benzos.
Right, right. But they could have the same thing if they're taking opiates. They just don't realize how potent. It's 20 to 45 times as potent as morphine.
I've just seen some terrible induction problems.
Right.
Like aspirations and ventilators and the whole thing. So it's not without its own risks.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. I've not seen that?
No. Really? I haven't seen you've probably done more inductions than I have.
No, I have other people do it.
Oh.
Because the reason I didn't get into Suboxone at all was I found I couldn't run the unit if there was an opiate on the unit. It's like, Bob, help me on with this one now. What was it like when an opiate was available? Even I had a big sign on my unit. No benzos, no opiates allowed in the nursing station. What would happen if one of those medicines were in the nursing station, Bob?
It just seems like...
Oh, he's breaking.
So
it would get chaotic. They would start vibrating.
But one of my pet peeves, right?
And then if one person got it, then it's like, how good? Why do they get it? I don't get it. And that's all they can talk about. You can't run a group. You cannot run a group because that's all they want to just. They get hostile and aggressive, and that's all they will talk about. I couldn't run a program.
One of my issues with my patients, they go to an AA meet. If somebody finds out they're on Suboxone, it's like, oh, you're not sober.
That's different. That's a different thing. Our thing was, he gets it and I don't. Why don't I get it? Why don't I get it? Why don't I get it? And he gets special. I just say go to a different part of the hospital.
Right.
If you want Suboxone, go to the second floor. That's it. Fine. Go get it.
Is it for detox, for pain, or for maintenance?
I can't have it on the unit. I couldn't have it on the unit. A benzo or an opiate. I couldn't run the damn... Because most units aren't set up to do the kind of aggressive treatment we were doing.
Okay.
With the sick of patients we were doing.
Right.
And we had Camelot. We had a great, great, great thing going on. We are hearing that Bob Forrest is landing. He's on the approach. So we're going to give him just a second to walk in the front door here. So we'll take a break. Be right back.
All conversations and information exchanged during participation in the This Life with Dr. Drew and Bob Forrest podcast or interaction with drdrew.com website is intended for educational and entertainment purposes only. Do not confuse this with treatment or medical advice or direction per se. Nothing on these podcasts or posted on this site supplements or supersedes the relationship and direction of your medical caretakers. Although Dr. Drew is a licensed physician with specialty board certifications by the American Board of Internal Medicine and the American Board of Addiction Medicine, he is not functioning as a physician in this environment. The same applies to any professionals who may appear on the sites or podcasts.
So we are back. It's This Life Podcast. Bruce Heischober, Dr. Spaz is our special guest today. Bob is still landing. We're still getting him landed here. But you said you had something you want to talk about there very quickly. Then I want to get back to the Prince case and really get into the weeds of Prince, what we think about that, okay?
I can't remember what I was going to...
You said something about Corey Moncrief.
Well, the article was talking about how addiction medicine killed Corey Moncrief, and what I see in the media, it's with celebrity issues, either with medication-assisted therapy, whether it's Suboxone or Methadone, either a very strong bias for it or against it.
That's true.
One of the problems.
That's true.
And I think you would, when I said I want to talk about it, I think you'd see me as somebody, I'm really adamantly for it.
Yeah.
And yet I'm just looking for this. It's just like with what we're talking about in politics. I would like something that's middle of the road, that's patient-oriented.
Well, I know you, so I know I can trust your judgment and stuff, and that's why I'm interested in talking to you about it. If I just thought you were an evangelist for that product, I'd be like, ugh.
No, it's real-world based. I just got called. I was in the ER, but I got called by the addictions unit yesterday, a 22-year-old that had been detoxed on Suboxone, put in residential treatment, and relapsed immediately.
Of course.
And had wanted Suboxone therapy.
Mm.
And there are other... underlying psychiatric issues. But
okay,
and then
You know what we need, Bruce? Here's what's missing. We need criteria to determine how to select those patients. Because in my head, I go, well, what are the psych issues? How do we know if the psych issues are serious enough to need Suboxone? There's no guidelines.
I was going to suggest just an open-minded approach by maybe a committee, but guidelines are absolutely right. But what I've experienced, doctors that say to me, I am anti-Suboxone.
Yeah.
And then other doctors that do seem to be a little too much, this is a magic pill.
Yeah,
so
that's right.
I had a brittle bipolar patient and addicted to Kratom and Tramadol. Interesting.
Ooh, interesting. There was somebody who was questioning about Tramadol in here. Tramadol is an opiate. Don't mistake that. It's an opiate.
Half of it looks like codeine, the molecule. Yeah. The other half looks like...
that's another... If you want to blame pharma for something, that's that one.
Because
they marketed it as a non-addictive medication.
Right.
There's no such thing as... There will never be a non-addictive opiate or a non-addictive benzodiazepine.
It's almost worse because part of the molecule looks like Effexor. So you get the norepinephrine stimulant feel-good effect, and then the codeine, the other part looks like codeine. Yeah. So it does. And then Kratom, which you can buy in a head shop, is again, it's related to the coffee plant. Mm-hmm. So I had a patient, bipolar. I wasn't around, went to a doctor that doesn't believe in it and said, this is terrible stuff, taper in a week.
Oh,
okay,
yeesh.
So... duly diagnosed. In other words, I think on an individual basis, yes, what the criteria would be. Mine would be failed multiple attempts at abstinence based sobriety.
Multiple diagnoses.
Right, multiple diagnoses.
Trauma, no family support, lack of resources, all that stuff would absolutely. But I would say that in that case, it should have been inpatient. If you want to get off your Suboxone, you need to do that in a hospital. Period.
Right, or slow taper.
No,
but
no. Well, not in that case. But then we knew we'd have criteria.
There was no discussion of stopping or tapering. This individual was stable for the first time in 6 months. Then 2 days ago, I saw a woman, 66 years old, on 300 of morphine and 100 of Norco a day with real pain problems. And when I presented that to another group of physicians in addiction medicine, they went, oh, you can't use... I said, she might do well on Suboxone because she has real pain.
Yeah.
She has a history of addictions and she's tapered down to this much.
And she's 65?
65 and wants to get off.
She tapered down to that much?
She was on 800 a day more. So anyway, so the response of this committee was, we need to make it black and white, Suboxone for pain or addictions. If you're using it for... We can't use it for pain. I said, this woman has an addiction history. She wants to get off immediately. And she's in pain.
See, that's the thing that drives me and Bob crazy, is that everyone wants to put a value judgment on the disease of addiction or the disease of chronic pain, the disorder.
Right.
That's not a value. It's just a condition. It's just something that humans suffer from. It doesn't have anything to do with values or religion or anything else.
But what frightens me is so physicians that would do no harm, what are you going to do with this woman that wants to get off the opiates and has real pain, needs another knee replacement?
Well, they're suggesting abstinence-based, but I'm not sure that's smart.
Yes, I don't think that's smart at all for a 65-year-old woman with real pain
issues. Who's, by the way, not motivated, not interested.
She was actually motivated to get off the morphine and Norco and saying, but what are you going to do about my pain? This is real pain. And talking to ortho, they're going, this woman has tremendous pain. She has bone on bone one side and a failed knee replacement on the other, and she's morbidly obese. Yeah. But so my issue with addiction medicine, I tend to see a polarization for and against. And
which is bad.
Right,
bad
absolutely.
Patients. So again, it suggests politics and religion rather than patient care.
Absolutely.
Which is weird.
Yeah.
But anyway, let's go back to
so
Prince. Prince is strung out fentanyl. How do you think he got... Now, let's read between the lines of the report from the medical examiner. He says fentanyl... because it's Minnesota, you don't get to see the full toxicology report. What's the probability that on that toxicology report there is a benzodiazepine?
I was going to ask you if you knew something I didn't know.
What would you guess?
What I guessed...
Probability.
What I guessed, 101% Xanax.
Okay,
and,
me too.
Oh,
right,
that's
so
what I said. When he first died,
okay,
I said...
Okay, so 100%, we both have 100% probability that there... 99%. Let's leave some room for error. 99% probability that this is an opioid and a benzo, because that's how people stop breathing.
Right.
Period, end. That being said, the reason we're saying that is it's hard to overdose on an opiate unless you're shooting it. Agreed? It's hard to. Now, you can't. It's hard to.
Snorting. I've had as many patients die of overdose when they were snorting.
By itself?
With Xanax.
I know, but with Xanax, it's easy. But with by itself.
Oh, by itself, absolutely.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
So that's why we're saying add the Xanax in, because it's hard to overdose on an opiate by itself.
Right.
Now, so we're going on the assumption that there's a benzo involved here, too. In this particular report, we are given the report that there's fentanyl toxicity. which is an interesting terminology. That means sufficiently high circulating levels of fentanyl to meet toxic levels, right?
Right.
How do you get that much in your system?
Shooting or snorting or chewing or doing things that you shouldn't with a pack. I would assume that he had
a pack. That's what I said. And some of the guys said, oh, no, this guy's an attorney, actually. He said, no, I'm seeing horrible problems now with sublingual and the squirt.
Oh, okay. There's lollipops. There's sublingual, right.
There's a sublingual tab and a sublingual squirt.
Right, absolutely. That's fairly recent.
It is a recent thing. There was an article in the New York Times just now that they're fining that company for the way they market it, thank God. I would still argue that's hard to overdose, even with those kinds of delivery systems.
Yes.
Okay. So we have this conundrum. What do you think happened in the elevator? What's your surmise of how that went down? I mean, why did he die in the elevator?
He was going for help. He was, I don't know.
He's going to eat or something, right?
Right.
Going to eat. He was so loaded that he fell down and couldn't get up and then just stopped breathing.
Right.
And he had the blood pooling in his periphery. And he had levito, what do they call that? Levito.
Reticularis.
Yeah. And he had rigor mortis. He had everything.
Six hours at least in that position, of death.
Yeah. So he had been lying in that elevator for a while dead.
Right. What amazed me, and he went to an emergency room. Which I know my colleagues were, my God, you know, 5150 the guy.
Yes. They let him go.
But this is where you especially could speak to this problem of celebrity and substance.
That's insane. Don't treat them differently than anybody else. I don't care what the F is going on. As soon as you treat them differently, they're going to get bad care.
Right.
That's it. You are delivering bad care. At the moment, you're impressed by them. At the moment, your judgment doesn't function normally. And certainly at the point at which you don't do what you normally do.
Although he was said to be, he signed out AMA, I believe.
So. Right. So he's entitled, if he's not holdable, maybe he was evaluated for hold. We don't know.
Yeah.
If he's not holdable, he's entitled to sign out against medical advice.
Right.
So you can't hold a guy like that. So we have fentanyl toxicity. We have underweight. What do you figure the nature of his opioid problem was?
I think it's just a typical chronic. Well, you know, I'm clouded by what I've been told about his past cocaine use, but once he became a Jehovah, this is what I've heard, and became a Jehovah's Witness, had a moral imperative against substance abuse, and then didn't start using until the hip problem and the chronic pain. Then once someone that has an addiction propensity or history starts using opiates for pain, I think it's just a downhill.
Is it possible spiral. He was not an addict, but one of these dependent chronic pain patients that we were talking about?
I don't think so.
See, I think so. I do think so. And I think it mostly because like all the addicts around go, this guy's not an addict, because they don't sense the addiction in him so much. I think what it is the trauma. He was severe really, childhood
right,
trauma.
Absolutely.
And so what percentage of chronic pain patients are trauma survivors?
I think majority.
96%.
Yeah.
So the trauma is what sets up the dysfunction, the insular cortex, which is where the problem is. The insular cortex, for everybody, is the part of the brain that registers what we call the valence, the affective valence, the misery component of pain. And that's the part that's going insane when people are not functioning normally, when people have chronic pain. And that's the part that opiates make worse. And so trauma patients are prone to this. And so I think he had a hip procedure. They gave him opiates for too long, special opiates because he's a special guy. Game on now, right?
But you don't think he'd meet criteria for addictive disorder?
I don't know until I saw him off opiates. That's my point. I look at two things. What other addicts call it? Because they have a nose for it that's uncanny. And then and sometimes they'll miss it when it's just a mild genetic burden. But if it's even a moderate genetic potential, they see it. I look at how much is he heading back to the drugs? How much is he cooperating with treatment? How much is he better just detoxing?
Right.
Right. Some people are just better. They're like relief.
Right. Well, I think for people listening, one of the things that I really affected my practice was honing in on prescribing Narcan and informing people. California is one of, I think, 12 or more, 14 states where you can buy Narcan, the reversal agent.
And I had a patient whose life was saved by his sister yesterday.
Absolutely wonderful.
And went to treatment.
Boom. Wow.
And then it took 3 injections of Narcan.
Well, maybe I should start prescribing more because I usually...
I've wondered about that because I've always seen it go back with one. She
right.
said to get
so,
three times.
So a lot of people say, well, what's that? So Narcan's the stuff that you squirt it in the nose or down the throat or IM into the muscle it, and it yeah. reverses opiates completely.
Yep,
so
instantly.
You could buy it in CVS. I called CVS and they said, well, we're getting it and yeah, it's available. You can just walk in and buy it. Anybody that is...
The fact that there's resistance to it is bizarre to me.
Yeah. Well, I think it's the legalistic approach to it. It's almost
the moralistic again. The moralism.
Right.
You can't save the life of an opiate addict? Why not?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's so weird.
But if you have a loved one that has a drug problem that even
keep
chronic
Narcan
pain
in your
keep
pocket.
Keep it
in
available.
Yeah, even chronic pain if they're on a benzo.
Oh my God.
Yeah. What do we do with the chronic pain patients on the benzos?
Stop the benzos. But again, benzos, the stuff I'm reading on that, the changes, the theory that you change the receptors even after just a few weeks, the shape of the receptor.
I'm
looking at studies where they give Ramazacon one time IV to reshape the receptor.
It's a benzo reversal agent. Yeah, I don't know if that does anything. I've seen them. Do you remember that whole business when they were going to shock stimulant addicts? Remember the enthusiasm for that BS they were giving stimulant addicts?
Yeah, but I don't think that had...
Some of our people we admired signed on to that. You remember that?
Yeah, yeah. No,
it was a disaster.
But this has... If anything, what this teaches people is that even taking benzos, for short, Xanax, whatever...
Changes your brain,
those receptors sometimes permanently... And there's a real risk. So I think the next thing, right now we're looking at everybody with 100 morphine milligram equivalents a day in medical systems, and there's a mandate to decrease the amount of morphine you give everybody, right. No matter why they're getting
fine.
It, unless they're cancer patients.
Well, also because there's no evidence it works. That's
right,
the whole thing.
Right,
it doesn't
right.
work.
It makes things worse.
Otherwise, right. we would use it.
Right.
But the benzo thing is massive. And by the way, all the Suboxone prescribers, Klonopin on the heels of that, that is very. It's a black box warning against Klonopin.
Yeah.
And yet they always do it.
Yeah. Well, I work with psychiatrists. If you have a patient with severe social phobia, general anxiety disorder, they know they're on Suboxone, and they walk into my office, and they're like, oh, I got this prescription, and they're on Xanax, 2 milligrams a day.
Oh, Jesus.
Would you rather have someone on Klonopin or Xanax?
Neurontin.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah.
There you go. Should I do some more emails? Okay. Let's get some more emails here. Our producer.
Are we entertaining you, Producer Susan?
Producer Susan. My six-year-old mother is addicted to methadone. Things are very bad. She got on a plane to Baltimore. I need help. She's in a hotel there. We are from Baltimore, so she knows people. I'm her daughter. Please get help. Six-year-old on methadone.
For what, though?
I think it's addiction.
For methadone maintenance, though, how would you handle a methadone maintenance person that's in their 60s that had her own problem?
I would leave it because the withdrawal is 6 months.
Right.
Horrible.
Oh, it is horrible.
I mean, let's put it this way. Again, it's a case-by-case thing. If she were super motivated and all over it and ready to go and resource to spend some time. Bobby, we're talking about a methadone addict, a six-year-old methadone addict, what to do with it.
I've been listening to you guys, and I realize nobody's going to listen to doctors talking about solutions that doctors caused.
Well,
we
didn't cause it.
But doctors did, and you're talking that way. I just came from a group of 400 parents whose kids are on drugs, dead of drugs.
Yeah.
They don't want to hear this stuff. They want to have solutions. They want answers.
That's what we're struggling with. Well, what do you suggest?
Well, there was a solution. It got lost in the Suboxone.
Marijuana
argument.
Maintenance? Is that?
No. AA. 12-step abstinence-based treatment.
Well, of course.
Why is it not? Why is it being replaced by harm reduction?
It's
and
not.
Boutique hotels?
I think you missed.
Yeah, it is.
No, Bobby, I think you missed what Bruce was saying. There's a gigantic pushback in the other direction. Gigantic.
Well, I wouldn't trust it because it's all for profit. $30 billion got spent on treatment last year, and it's very ineffective for this population of millennials because it just gives them whatever they want. Parents, you need to unite with the 12-step community and trustworthy recovery
Social models
to start standing up to these kids. No, you don't get to go, and we have to be able to be willing to allow them to go into the streets, and that's what parents are not willing to do.
How about my models of virtue and values and faith and all that kind of try to really get something going again?
I hate to say it, I know I'm the token liberal around here, but Bernie Sanders tapped into something.
Yeah, people are wanting something.
It's easy to understand what Trump tapped into. Hate is hate. It's always easy to stir up. In the Nuremberg trials, they talked about how easy it is to stir up.
You're right. It's scapegoating is what he's using. But forget the scapegoating. It's the because I to me, I want to thump some Trump supporters. I want to like understand them and dissect them and take them apart. And they all say the same thing: work, money.
They're
all of them
fed up.
Well, they want economic. They want.
So do the kids on the Bernie side. They're fed up. They're only 20 years old, and they're fed up.
But they want a meaningful life, and they want meaningful work available to them, and they want to see vibrance and growth.
Well,
and those
we
things.
Need to accept who's to blame, and it's Clinton and Reagan. Equal. NAFTA, which is what Trump's big statement is, NAFTA got rid of whatever jobs Reagan didn't run out of the country or allow to leave the country.
The original theorist on capitalism, Adam Smith, felt that international economy was essential to the growth of the entire system. So, you know, all the way back to the 18th century, I think what's happened is it's gone too far. It needs to come back. Like, bottom line, we've gone way too far. It's not so easy.
Bernie's trying to tap into my wallet. That's the problem.
Right.
Listen, if you haven't formed an LLC, that's your problem.
I think they should make Bernie Sanders run with Trump and work. Put
him
in a room.
I saw them
work
as coming together as a real power broker. Yeah. How could Trump win without the conservative Republicans, and how could Bernie win
with his little, they're both anti-establishment.
Yeah, they join together and they could be a potent.
But you have to block them in a room. They have to come out with a solution.
But really, the anger and frustration I'm more focused on is in the addiction treatment population.
Right.
The solution.
You mentioned that every
right.
week.
Let me ask you something. Okay, if it's a medical problem and you have a response, it's like I treat patients with the same, excitement about recovery, 12 step sobriety.
But
and
I don't
if they're
think
on
they
Suboxone.
Should be going to a doctor asking about that. In 1983 or 84, when I was going to doctors like you guys, you would kick me out
addiction
of your
medicine?
Office. Because
no,
I'm.
So he's right. I was
that's
there.
The truth.
No, I was there.
I wasn't
for all
allowed
this.
In
so,
doctor's
so hold
offices.
Hold on, hold on, hold on.
All of a sudden, 19-year-old kids are being treated.
Slow
okay,
your roll.
You know what I'm talking
the history
about.
History is.
I don't know what he's talking about.
The history is because I was there. The history is psychiatry ruled addiction treatment and did essentially what's happening right now. And so the recovery community lost all faith and trust in medical providers and went, if you see a psychiatrist, we don't even want you in the 12-step community because they're gonna kill you. They're going to mess you up. So it created this huge – that's why I got hired. You don't know this. I got hired as an internist because I wasn't a psychiatrist. I could run a program that the psychiatrists weren't jealous of me and the 12-step community kind of accepted me. That's how I got.
That's how
I got a career. You don't even know this, Bob. That's how I got the job.
But I'm talking about an overeager medical profession
right.
to prescribe opiates to kids.
Oh, well, please don't even go. Right, here's the deal.
We have Why to wrap not
this
go
up.
There?
Because we have to wrap this up. That's a separate podcast. We got a couple of minutes.
I'm just getting my claws out.
So my producer has told me to hook the story to print.
God.
So
yeah, no, I get it. But 19-year-olds were not. When I was 19, I was stoned on pot. I had puka shells and long hair. If I walked into one of your guys' offices saying my back ache, you go tough shit.
That's right.
That's the truth of it.
Yeah.
And now, 35 years later,
by the way,
you're
I have
like,
slipped
oh,
this
we
right
need
now.
Suboxone. We need this drug, this drug, this drug. America's tired of drug solutions to drug problems.
Well, I think it's more complicated than
yeah,
that. I think
I
the solution, if somebody that's
when your kid's dead, you're not laughing.
No crosstalk. Quit interrupting
when
me.
When your kid's
make
dead,
believe this
dead
is a
you're
meeting.
Not laughing. I know.
Okay. So if we find out that benzos or opiates affect receptors, so there's a biologic effect on
the brain.
On the brain. There may need to be a medical solution to that problem. It doesn't mean you don't go to meetings or remain sober. So with benzos...
Bob and I would argue that you learn to live with your new brain system.
But it may not
and that's
be...
that's why you have...
It's
may
intolerable,
be possible.
But to his defense, it's intolerable to millennials because they've never been allowed to hurt at all, ever, for anything. So we've got a perfect storm here, and we
all
can
right.
be philosophical, but right. I just met two moms whose kids are dead at 22 and 20 years old.
It's very sad.
And it's so
From
effed
what?
Up. Opioids.
But did they try Suboxone?
Yeah, all of them try Suboxone.
For how long?
All of them are on Suboxone. Well, how long? Until they died.
But were they working? See, I don't know how they died. I have patients on Suboxone. Not all of them are. I have a lot of dependent patients that are not on Suboxone. They go, I'm not going to do this, and I support that. But when patients have multiple relapses and they're trying working a program, some of them should be on Suboxone. That's all I'm saying. I think there's a subset.
Why not just
subset.
On Naloxone? Why does it have to be Suboxone?
Good point.
Because the receptor, the endorphin system is changed such that even
you're diverting the question. Why not just put them on opioid blocker so they have no effect from opiots?
Because it doesn't have the same effect in neutralizing.
Because they don't want it. That's why. They won't take it.
No, it doesn't work.
doesn't make them happy.
Minimal effect on those receptors in terms
of. Let us then work on them on our abstinence treatments.
No, but I'm saying patients that have failed abstinence.
Why? No, I'm saying put under the arm, you know, naloxone thing that gives continuous
delivery. Yeah, that thing works. 90-day thing. Yeah.
And then let us work on their misery.
Right, but I've had patients where they were doing abstinence and
I know. We've got to wrap this up.
Okay.
I know.
This is the eternal conundrum. It's no question.
It's not going to be much longer. I know what the spirit of parents is. And they're sick of this shit.
All right. Well, I am too. So is Bruce. I mean, it's not like we're not all tired of the way this is going. But be that as
well. Well, let's get the one thing I wanted to talk about is patient satisfaction scales.
Well, that
right?
He was one of the
patient satisfaction scales are fucked. Well, let's abolish them then. Well, how do we go about? I can steer.
You know what Bernie would do
with
that? You know where that's
say,
coming from?
Fuck
Obamacare. Let me tell you something. Read the 15,000 pages.
It's coming from Obamacare, and he is going to lose his job because of it. I'm pointing at Bruce. He's going to lose his job because he doesn't pay attention to those. He's going to get fired.
Well, no, wait a second. I'm not.
That's what you told me there was a risk.
Don't be firing him too quickly.
There's a risk because I'm very pro Suboxone.
I'm just saying.
Patient satisfaction surveys are tied to reimbursement.
It's too late.
Right.
That horse is out of the barn.
It's gone.
Because the national infrastructure requires it. You would have to go to your federal government and revoke Obamacare and then redo it.
If all doctors united and objected to them,
we don't seem capable of doing that ever on anything.
Well, then that's your guys' fault.
We are codependent. We like to help people. We
can get every musician in the world to do a benefit for Bernie Sanders. I can tell you that.
We got a break. It's been very interesting. We've covered a lot of interesting territory. You feel good, Bruce? You good with this?
I want to come back again.
Yeah.
Because
we covered a lot of stuff.
I was listening a lot. It was great.
All right. Be sure to look for us at thislifepodcast.com, also drdrew.com. Please support the people that support our podcast. It's very important that we keep this thing going. We think this is a really cool little thing we're doing. And Bruce, we'll spread the word on the Corolla Network so all those guys will come. Those Nudniks will come on over here. And we will see you next time.
Independence makes no human sense. Pestilence walking around. Forgiveness, non-existent. Just a cruel mess in this blood business. You never know when a mind like mine has put your love killing time. Getting high for a heart this cold. We can find forever, never growing old. It's a wild game, it's a sickness. Blood business. Intimidation. Little moderation. Every nation slaying similar faces. Killing time. You're getting high for a heart this cold. We can find forever, never growing old. It's a wild game. It's a sickness. Blood business. Time. You're getting hot for a heart this cold. We can find forever, never grow.